tad more brightness. Action smoke. Action helicopter.
Oh, guys. Guys, we don't need all this. This is just a conversation.
Cut, cut, cut.
Welcome to another edition of Spotlight Conversations with Donna Reed. No matter where you're listening from, we invite you to just get comfy and enjoy the next few minutes as we bring you new perspectives and maybe even some fun and laughter. No drama here, though. Just good conversation. Now, here she is, the woman who Alexa and Siri wish they could sound like. It's the lovely and gracious Donna Reed.
New episode, Spotlight Conversations. In case you're new to the podcast, you might be scratching your head going, what's it about, Donna? Basically, I'm very nosy, and I like to ask people who work in media, how did you get that job? What did you do to get where you are today? And then I got to thinking about agents and talent managers. And sometimes you can find a few at voiceover conferences like VO Atlanta. Didn't get a chance to go to VO Atlanta this month. And VO Atlanta is this big shindig, a big conference for voiceover talent. And you meet other talent, there's voice conferences, some training info, you meet people in the business. Highly recommend it. But I knew someone who has been part of VO Atlanta from the very beginning, Jeff Umberger of ACM Talent, where they're based in New York. And I asked Jeff, I said, let's come on the show and talk about what it means to have a talent agent. He's a talent manager. It's nice if you can have both, by the way. And as I was thinking about the podcast, I started watching Entourage, you know, just to get into the mood. And I said, this is kind of like talking to Ari Gold, kind of, sort of. Welcome, Jeff.
I guess you can say that. Some people might say that. A lot of people will probably change it from gold to silver or maybe bronze. There you go.
There you go. So how, I'm trying to get an idea of, but in your case, did it help being a performer? I see you were an actor too before you did this.
Well, it helped in a lot of key ways to be sort of on that side of the fence first, Donna. It really did. It gave me the perspective to know as a representative how the actor feels, what they think. And that's more important sometimes than what even they do as a talent, because you can approach their feelings and their thoughts in a methodical way. You can goal set, knowing what they think, what their fears are, what their wants are. So yeah, as you know, as an actor, I started just all the way back in high school in 1978. I did a little walk-on. That was the first love that drove me to this point. It was a great run of it, but I did that for, you know, once you do something for 20 years or more, you kind of feel like you're ready to move on. And just circumstantially, my career took a little path into the other side. To the other side. It sounds dark. To the other side of representation. And I started off casting, producing for programming on HGTV and DIY Network and through commercial casting, and then needed more hours. So I found myself at the front desk of a talent agency, and at the same time, they needed someone to run the voiceover auditions in the voiceover booth. And so I quickly became accustomed, or I guess acquainted or introduced to voiceover. We all kind of find voiceover by accident. And so I became what is known as a booth director. I directed the auditions and then finally became the head of voiceover before opening my own shop for about 10 years and just solely focused on voiceover representation before moving to ACM as manager, which to me is a better way to fully represent someone's rounded career. Yeah. So it gives me the idea of an actor, what they see as their representative. I knew what I saw in my representatives. I had great representation, but I felt like I was on the outside a lot of the time. I didn't quite know what buttons I could push without being dropped. Could I call the agency and talk? That outsiderness, I hated feeling as an actor, and I hate at all thinking that any of my talent that I rep today feel on the outside. It's definitely a partnership in careers.
And so when you had your agency, the Umberger Agency, did you have a big staff? Did you call in other voice talent that sort of thought the way you did?
I didn't. I ran it by myself. And it, I'll tell you one reason I did was that I was with PeopleStore, a big talent agency. And when I left, I was going to coach for a while. And instead, all these people that I was coaching, I thought, I would love to find you work. But of course, PeopleStore has filled my position. So rather than take Rebecca's, you know, years of accumulated buyers, I just decided to be quietly present at conferences and just being there as instead of advertising. And I didn't want to pull any buyers my way. I was basically making one booking a week first week. I made a booking, which was pride making, but it wasn't going to pay any staff. So ultimately, the agency grew to a national recognized agency size. And so I had a lot more buyers that came from the digital world. I could have afforded a staff by then.
As a talent agent, do you ever get people coming in? They've got the tape, they've got everything they need, but you hear, not quite yet. They need a lot of training. They need to really focus on this craft before they go out into the quote unquote real world. Does that happen a lot as a talent agent? I would guess you get like bazillions of tapes or CDs.
I do have a freak file.
Okay, wait. So a freak file, what is that?
Auditions that come in that might not ordinarily hit at all.
Okay.
Are worthy of saving just for the laugh, and it's not to laugh at the talent, but
it's
quirky. That everyone's notion of what will get attention
agent, you must hear, or they deliver a voice package. Does that happen?
Well, they will deliver stories about you and their representation together so that you can hear their voice, or they'll whistle the whole thing.
Really?
It's interesting because I know that a lot of actors need to have flying of colors to be noticed. It's
sure.
a very hard game out there. So I don't begrudge anyone trying that, but it really doesn't get you in the door too much unless your talent backs it up, and it's hard to see
now,
if they're just whistling.
What if you, I can only imagine, what if you get a whole, in a week, you get a bunch of samples of people who are really, really good. What is the deciding factor to bring them on?
Well, you first look at the roster you do rep and dedicate the time to, and with mm-hmm. duplicating, you know,
yeah.
what the efforts would be to put for one person, would they be slid?
If they sound like somebody already on the roster, like?
Yeah, familiar voices are tough, and there are a lot of people that sound like because they follow the trends of what's booking, and so they do want to sound like what's booking.
How often do you hear somebody that's just very unique? Does that happen very often?
Yeah, you do get these texturized or textural voices that are so unique that you can't wait to stick them on the roster because you know people are looking for that different sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do sort of grab them up. As long as the talent backs that up, you're in a good place to work with that talent and find them work that they might not have found on their own.
What is a textured voice? For someone that's not in the voiceover business, what is that exactly?
I think there's a certain clean speak to a lot of our voices. Mine might be, I guess, sort of mumbly. That's a texture of sorts. It's not necessarily a buyable texture or a marketable texture, but it is what you're born with. And when you just wake up and speak hello, what does that sound like? And a textured voice would be someone of either a rasp or a certain characteristic that makes their words end in a certain kind of a hiccup or not an actual hiccup, but sort of a glitch in their voices.
Yeah.
I think there's an interest of people who hear narration over, let's say, the killer shows that we call them, the murder shows. When you're talking about a murder mystery, is there something to that voice that lends itself a little bit more credence or more interest if it's got some texture or some rasp, you know, unique trait?
Can that be taught?
It can be steered to that, but it can't quite be, you can't quite fabricate it. If you notice or someone has the ability to sort of either do voices or strain their voice in a certain way without damaging their vocal cords, you can help guide them to that. But if it's going to be a long career of just that, it's probably not something that anyone does.
You have someone that has a unique assortment of character voices, and they're using their voice in different ways. Do you also have on your roster a voice doctor, so to speak, for those people that, you know, they use that voice all the time? I guess it's like playing a sport. You know, you're going to abuse it to a certain point. You got to take care of your voice.
Yeah, we do have animation voices that take a certain day of the week off.
Oh,
a day
wow.
of rest.
Really?
And they do laryngeal exercises, I think, that are, or massage things that have strained the larynx. There is a massage for that. it is not like a body massage type thing. It's just something that actually takes the instrument and gives it a break and sort of relaxes it. That's the part that we all speak with. And if it, you're doing something with loud voices or high-pitched voices for an extended period of time for an animation, that's definitely going to put that muscle in strain. There are sprays, there are, you know, things that you can drink that help your throat and stuff like that. So there are people that are just sort of, I guess you might be out of the commercial zone and more into the animation or video game zone where you're a little more heightened with volume and energy.
So warm tea and honey, is that still a viable drink?
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to go away. It's good for you, and it definitely does help the voice, too.
I see you were a voice coach for on-air talent at CNN and NPR. Can you tell us who those were, or is that sort of confidential?
It is a little confidential, just because of who they wanted to be known, either needed the help or received the help.
I had to ask. It's just like the newspaper reporter inside me, I guess. I had to question.
That's right. And I know what, you know, interestingly enough, it wasn't the as necessarily the anchors. It was the people that presented a show, let's say a travel type thing, where they needed to evoke a sense of place.
Yes.
And sometimes bringing that out or eliciting someone to want to travel or to look into the medical field. Some of the narration is where more of the coaching came in rather than the anchor.
I'm coming from a radio background, and radio and TV, they're two different cousins, so to speak. When you have a television person coming to a voiceover talent, it's strictly audio. How are TV people working with a voice talent agency compared to, say, radio people working with a voice talent agency? Is there a difference?
There is, because TV people know that the body language they're using actually with their actual bodies and not just with their voice is something that's sold and manipulated. So the on-camera people use the entire package of body and voice language. And so radio people do understand they have to be a certain delivery for the excitement to come through or the raised eyebrow sound or the wink in your voice or whatever.
That's true. Do radio people or actors do better as voiceover talent, in your opinion, since you've been doing this for a while?
I find a lot of radio people find their delivery niche, and it's hard to break it out of them, but they do and can if they have the ear and the understanding that if you're not in radio, you do lose that radio sound if you're going to be in a commercial so that you don't sound like a radio. But actors are actors, and I think a lot of people in radio do need to act a certain degree to get people to listen, to stay tuned, and, you know, to have a show that's tuned in every day. It's hard to get people to turn the knob to your station. So that takes a lot of acting on top of personality that a lot of radio has. And as long as the radio people have been of the understanding that it is a niche sound that they have for radio that they have to lose if they're going to step into commercial or audiobook, then that's great. I do find that actors in general have it a little easier because they weren't stamped into one place quickly. Right. And so there is a thumbprint that radio people get.
We were talking earlier about audiobooks and AI. We'll get to the AI topic in a minute. I'm not sure. Do you represent people who do audiobooks?
Yes, absolutely. We focus on commercial because the bread and butter is for a majority of people. There are, of course, people that read audiobooks, and then suddenly, instead of just seeking out audiobooks, people follow them on Amazon or wherever it might be that they find their audio and follow their books regardless of what they read. So there is a great living in audiobooks, and we do rep people that either do it through our agency or came to us with an audiobook library, and it's fun.
Do you find that actors, theater actors, have a better transition to audiobooks than, say, your typical voiceover talent who does animation and commercials and promo work?
Very definitely, it's an edge to have come from theater or from multi-character work into audiobook, because you are the narrator and each of the characters, male and female, adult and animal, and tree, you're everything for an audiobook. So that is definitely a plus if you've been, you know, on a stage.
New talent coming into the business?
Well, we as managers at this point, you know, sometimes agencies will be a factory, I guess, sometimes of sorts for auditions to be sent out and to be collected. Managers sometimes take the careers that have been cultivated and worked up over a period of time and takes that career and makes it abundant and avalanche opportunities for that already established career.
Right, right.
So I do feel... there's, to me, there's a sense of growth in an already established career. I like people that already have sort of the gumption and the goal and have already set a career on a path and yet need help to guide it to where mm-hmm. to know where to put up the yield sign for a certain category that might be a conflict for some goal they have. If you want to be the voice of a car, you know, for an automotive company, mm-hmm. you might shield yourself from doing local car ads that could be a conflict down the road if you do get National Toyota.
Right.
If we have certain listeners that are our buyers that we know are going to, you know, sort of like what your voice will do, we'll be able to pitch you to them and say, hold off on Subaru. We've got Toyota pretty strong exactly. in your court. So I like that.
Do you ever have talent that they've got the voice, they have the delivery, but they don't realize they have to do what you just mentioned? You have to hustle. You have to work hard too. It's not just you guys. It's not just the talent agent doing all the work. The talent has to do the work too. And do you feel that sometimes that message is lost?
Yeah, I do. I know there's a mindset of a lot of people, maybe just with talent agencies rather than a certain management that you're partnered with, mm-hmm. that feel like, you know, once I've got a manager, I'm just going to sit back and let the opportunities come in,
exactly.
or I won't have to goal set anymore. But that is definitely wrong. We goal set with you, and we help you figure out what opportunities you'd like to have fished out and found your way. They're at the stage of people that ACM represents, that's not quite a common occurrence that someone's kind of sitting or unenthused about it or just
right. But there's always a few. I don't know. It just seems like even for voice talents like myself we've been doing it for a while, we'll get people who go, oh, I can do a bunch of character voices. But I think in the back of their mind sometimes, and it's not everybody, they sort of like, oh, let me get a talent agent and he'll do or she'll do the rest.
Yeah, there is that mindset. I think it's hard to yeah. combat that because you feel like you've got a job to do as an actor and they have a job to do as your representative. And it primarily is set in place like that. We all sit at the same table, but definitely it is a partnership in energies and usefulness as well as presenting the opportunities for them.
See, I'll sometimes explain, it's like Major League Baseball. The pitcher isn't just pitching and just waiting. You know, the sports agent, he's hustling too. You know,
that's right. Yeah.
I always like to do sports analogies. Nobody knows if that was the Houston Astros or the Mets, but we'll let that go. I'm talking to Jeffrey Umberger. He's voiceover talent manager with ACM Talent. He has coached on-air talent at CNN and NPR, had his own agency, Umberger Agency. And I always like to ask guests on Spotlight Conversations, if they weren't doing what they do now in media, what would you be doing?
Well, one of two things, probably building a really tiny miniature. I like miniatures.
Do ya?
Even if you take a train track with little village around it, getting even smaller than that, that's just a fascinating world to escape to. Not many people know that about me, but it's kind of a fascinating thing. So I would either be doing that to spend some time or I would go back to the acting side. I think it's fun now to go weave in and out of it. I wouldn't be trying to be an actor as a representative. I feel that conflict is too great.
Yeah.
But I do miss it sometimes.
Do you?
I would love to be back.
I mean, if they had like a cameo on The Blacklist, could you do it?
Yeah, I could. Definitely been asked here and there from the remnants of the career that I once had to return either in a role or just do a kind of a walk-on where there's nothing of a competition for anyone else to audition for. I think that conflict's fine, you know, but I wouldn't, you know, at one point I was the print agent at an agency, but I was auditioning for commercial stuff. And just by being in the room with the other actors who were not involved with print, and neither was this casting director wasn't involved in print, there was an implied connection or an inner connection that I had just by being in the business on that side. I'm sure there were dozens of actors who felt by seeing me at an audition for commercial as a print agent that I had some in. And I never did, but I stopped auditioning at that time. I just said, this is too much to put an actor through who's trying to concentrate before their audition and seeing that, oh, well, there goes that job because I'm sure he's got it. So I just stopped auditioning just in case that was anything anyone was thinking. I just stopped it. It wasn't worth that much I didn't love it that much to hurt anyone else's careers, you know.
We were talking a little bit about AI and the future of voiceover and AI and audiobooks, say. I mean, you know, I so appreciate the artists that go in there and do an audiobook, but then you hear AI and not quite the same, but it could get there where it sounds pretty good pretty soon. What's your feeling about the future of the voiceover industry with AI as on our doorstep?
It's a slippery slope, but we are taking steps to remove some of those inroads where AI could take over. And I've been fooled. Maybe we all have at this point been fooled up until. Yeah. And you can tell some telltale things that show that it's an AI voice. And you think, oh, my gosh, that really got me. But there are clauses that we are putting in place. Of course, the SAG-AFTRA strike that just happened, the writer's strike. All of that was helpful to start the word, to start the road for it. But there's a clause that we put in our invoices, and there's clauses in our contracts that we're having added. Any kind of wording that that takes away the right to use or sell or the voice for performance of any type of artificial intelligence use for, and then if you add in the words any company, any person, any entity now, or, you know, it's now the time to turn that wording back around on the buyer to say, if they wanted to use our commercial in any known universe, we don't want you to use our voice in any known universe, you know.
You know, all this talk about AI, it's just been recent, we'll just say for typically the last couple of years. What about voice people who've been doing work long before that? That work is out there.
It is. And, you know, you raise a very good point that just because we've started to protect it now, recordings are not new. And the potential for someone to take that is immense. It's a tough thing. There's no specific way to safeguard it except to keep tabs on what your voice has voiced, to learn to recognize how AI might have changed that and to find out, you know, what entity changed that. Could change a lot of hands in production companies or producers or whatever it might be down the road. And, you know, tracking it back is a tough thing. I do get the sense, though, that what is being, you know, sort of copied now, I guess you might say, or enhanced right now is new ways of speaking, new inflections. Comes a time when speaking does become outdated in a style. So hopefully that's a little bit on our side. And it's almost like water under the bridge. However, if you are diligent and you can trace it, you know, or keep track, that's the only thing we can do for ourselves.
Do you have a legal background and do you need that with all this coming up?
Several on our management team do have a legal background. The founders do, a couple of others do. I don't have. I was pulled over once for tailing too close. That's my legal.
That's a whole other podcast, as I would say. Yeah, that's a whole. So just fast forward to 2044, the voiceover landscape, talent agents, audiobooks. What do you see?
That's fascinating. Boy, you asked the best questions,
Thank
Donna.
Thank you.
Well, I might not be here, but if I am.
You will be.
The voiceover has been Teflon for a lot. It was Teflon through COVID, thank God, and it was Teflon through the strike. That doesn't mean it will always be that way, but I do feel like the protections that we're putting in place right now will safeguard the VO industry in a number of ways that we see it today. Just as you look back, the biggest change in voiceover over the last couple of decades, of course, has been the digital nature of our business, but otherwise, we are still voicing over something, and I think we always will, even 20 years into the future. I think we might sound a little different. Maybe there's going to be filters that are put on that make us seem more fun or that are more acceptable to be added on to our natural performance. So maybe there's inventive performance things, but otherwise I think we'll still be here and in control of it.
I think those, you know, on hold message systems and so on, that's going to be a thing of the past. That would make sense. But if one has a creative voice, if I'm interpreting it right, they may have a future.
That's true. That's very, very true. Well, you know, if you take someone that is the voice of a product, they also appear on the IVR systems sometimes. But other than that, it is sort of an open game there, and it's not as necessarily creative right now as it is to just be professional sounding. But that could be a place where that really lives.
Now it's 2024, so we're going to bring everybody back. VO Atlanta. Now, I know you're a big part of that.
it was started off to be, we want to have, you know, Atlanta become the focal point of voiceover. And so I was helpful to Gerald, and hopefully some ways to say, we, here's where you might find the most audience and what they're interested in. Over the years, there's been, you know, training sessions within the conference, and then there's panels about, I always run the Atlanta panel, which speaks specifically about the Atlanta film and TV industry growth and how it affects voiceover and all the Fortune 500 companies here that you can find voice work for, and the Cartoon Network and Turner Studios. So mm-hmm. Atlanta has a big footprint in the voiceover world. And so it makes sense that there's one here. The fact that it's the largest is maybe, I have no idea why, it really took hold, and it's a popular one. And it draws casting directors and producers and buyers for talent from around the world. And so talent who are here are learning a lot from them and being exposed to them. So it's a very helpful conference, I think.
It's voiceover, voatlanta.me. Is that correct? Is that their website?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes, that's their website, yeah.
I've learned a lot. I've been in this business for a while, but I've learned a lot of things that I really didn't give that much thought to. So you'll be getting some messages from me time to time going, what? Where? Why?
I'd love that, Donna. Well, it's great to spend time with you, and thanks for focusing it on voiceover. It's my world right now, and I sure love it, and I don't see that changing. I admire your voice. I think you have a great, wonderful voice, so I'm glad to be connected with you, and I know you're friends with lots of our friends. We're
yes,
a small community and a close one.
Yes, Mark Gus was instrumental in my career, for sure. He took a chance, and yes.
Fantastic. Well, I wish you luck on this great podcast you've started.
Thank you.
It's got a lot of great listening.
You've been listening to Spotlight Conversations with Donna Reed. Subscribe on Apple and Spotify podcasts or your favorite platform. Thanks for tuning in.